One of the simple pleasures in my life is a good audiobook. It's been a lifelong thing. For as long as I can remember, I have listened to audiobooks. First, books on tape, remember cassettes, and then on CD, and now usually on my phone. A consequence of growing up in rural New Mexico was that virtually any family vacation involved at least 3 hours in the car. And my parents discovered early on that their four kids, with ages spanning 10 years, could be kept relatively happy if there was an audiobook playing, whether it was Garrison Keillor, or Harry Potter, or the Dolaire's Book of Greek Myths. And then at some point, I started listening to audiobooks as I fell asleep, too. And my lifelong love of audiobooks has never really waned. Still to this day, I almost always have an audiobook playing while I fall asleep, and while I'm at the gym, and while I knit or play computer games in the evening, and when I drive for more than about 2 minutes. My job involves a lot of reading and writing, so unfortunately I don't get to listen to audiobooks very often while I'm working, but I do find the odd occasion here or there. I checked on my Audible app just before church started, and it informs me that I have spent the equivalent of 10 months, 29 days, 7 hours, and 47 minutes listening to audiobooks just on that platform alone. That's almost a year. Now, there are certainly any number of reasons why I like audiobooks so much and why I've spent at least a year of my life listening to them, but I think that one of them is that I'm not particularly well disposed to silence. Given the option between sitting in a quiet room and having something to listen to, I will usually, almost always, choose to have something to listen to. Again, there's probably a couple reasons for this that intersect and overlap, but I think it has at least in part to do with the fact that generally as a culture, we have some discomfort with silence. A 2011 study in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology found that conversational silences as short as just 4 seconds can elicit feelings of rejection and other negative emotions. Just 4 seconds. That pause just now, that was about 4 seconds. And how did it feel to just sit unexpectedly when you expected me to be preaching, but instead you had silence? Was it confusing? Maybe a little uncomfortable? Were you hoping that I would break the silence? Were you wishing that you could break the silence? Because that's what our usual impulse is when we're faced with an uncomfortable silence, to break it. I was the kid in school who didn't always want to raise my hand even when I knew the answer to the teacher's question, but I was also the kid who just couldn't bear sitting in an awkward silence when the teacher asked a question that no one answered. So I would end up raising my hand anyway. I don't know if it's cultural conditioning or an inborn trait or some combination of both, but I think most of us have a level of aversion to silence and a desire to break silence when we encounter it. Which brings us to Zechariah. I varied a little bit from the lectionary today. The lectionary starts in verse 68 with this part that Lisa read, with Zechariah singing and prophesying upon the birth of his son John, who would become known as John the Baptist. But if you start the story there, you miss the fact that Zechariah's song is significant not just for what he's saying, but for the fact that he's saying anything at all. As we heard in the passage from earlier in Luke's gospel that Selma read, Zechariah, like Mary, was visited by the angel Gabriel to announce an impending pregnancy. Also like Mary, Zechariah was surprised by this news and questioned the angel about how it could be. Remember, Mary asks, "How can this be, for I am a virgin?" And Zechariah asks, "How can I be sure of this, since my wife and I are both very old?" But whereas Gabriel just answers Mary, even pointing to Elizabeth's pregnancy as an example of nothing being impossible with God, the angel scolds Zechariah for not believing what he was told and strikes him mute for the duration of Elizabeth's pregnancy. Now, remember, silences as short as just 4 seconds can get awkward, even distressing. The average pregnancy lasts about 280 days, which is 24 million seconds. That's 6 million periods of 4 seconds. That's a long time for anyone not to be able to speak. When Zechariah returns home, he can't share the news of his vision with his wife, the one who, after all, is going to be carrying this miraculous pregnancy Gabriel talked about. For 9 months, 280 days, 24 million seconds, he can't speak to his friends or family or neighbors, not even to his wife. Not even to share in the joy and nervousness and awe and wonderment that this holy pregnancy must have elicited. He can't even speak to participate in the conversation about what to name the child. He can't even speak his son's name out loud. It seems like, perhaps, the angel Gabriel meant this period of enforced silence as a punishment for Zechariah's unbelief. And maybe that was part of it. But I also think that in some ways, Gabriel was giving Zechariah a gift by striking him mute in the face of God's marvelous works. The gift of silence. Thomas Merton was a Trappist monk and arguably one of the most famous and influential Christian contemplative and mystical writers of the 20th century. He was also a dedicated anti-war activist and a proponent of interfaith dialogue and engagement. Now, I was always under the impression that Trappists take a vow of silence, but that's actually not the case. Trappists do speak aloud for functional communication and for spiritual exchange, but they also cultivate intentional silence in as much of their lives as possible. Long ago, Trappist monks developed a special sign language to communicate with as little noise as possible. They even have found ways to tell jokes using their monastic sign language. Merton wrote extensively on contemplative spirituality, of which silence was for him an essential part. He wrote of the silence that is printed at the center of our being. Now, I could just fill this whole sermon with Thomas Merton's beautiful writings on silence, but I didn't think you would necessarily appreciate that. But here are just a few of the ways he wrote about the gift of silence. He said, "Music is pleasing not only because of the sound, but because of the silence that is in it. Without the alternation of sound and silence, there would be no rhythm. If we strive to be happy by filling the silence of life with sound, productive by turning all life's leisure into work, and real by turning all our being into doing, we will only succeed in producing a hell on earth. If we have no silence, God is not heard in our music." He also wrote, "Forests and fields, sun and wind and sky, earth and water all speak the same language. Peace, solitude, silence. Peace, solitude, silence." That sounds like Advent to me. Advent is the time when, in the midst of the commercialized celebrations around us and their demands that we decorate and entertain and buy and buy and buy some more, we prepare to enter once more into one of the great mysteries of our faith, the mystery of God becoming human and dwelling among us, the mystery of the promise that God in flesh will come again to make all things new. This mystery is vast and deep and profound. It's hard to commercialize, hard to turn into this year's must-have Christmas gift. Perhaps all we can do sometimes in the face of this mystery is to sit in silence and awe and wonder. But if we do that for more than 4 seconds, remember, we're going to get uncomfortable. And so all of the rest of it comes in. And we get Hallmark movies and jaunty Christmas songs and commercials, and they crowd out the peace and solitude and silence. They drown out the language with which we understand the mystery of Advent. And so, maybe like Zechariah, we sometimes need the angel Gabriel to remind us to keep silence. This Advent, as we wait and wonder, perhaps we can best attune ourselves to the rhythm of God's grace by intentionally cultivating the kind of silence with which God so often speaks. We have 16 days of Advent left. I invite you to prepare to welcome the Christ child, God's love enfleshed, into your life and into the world by looking for 16 opportunities for intentional silence. 16 moments without Hallmark movies or Christmas carols, without the radio, even without audiobooks. 16 moments in which the awe and wonder of the season can be expressed without the need for words. And then remember that the silence Gabriel imposed on Zechariah was eventually broken. In the face of the marvelous works of God's own hand, Zechariah's voice rang out. He whose voice had gone unheard for all those long days and weeks and months, saying, "Because of our God's deep compassion, the dawn from heaven will break upon us to give light to those who are sitting in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide us on the path to peace." That is Advent work too. When those who need words of comfort and promise are met with a silence hollowed out by indifference, when those who lift their voices to speak uncomfortable truths are treated as though they never spoke at all, when the world silences the sounds of joy and justice and peace and hope, we are not called to always retreat back into the contemplative silence we have built for ourselves. The same awe and wonder that sometimes finds its fullest expression in silence and stillness also sometimes needs to be expressed with prophetic words of promise and hope. And so the other half of the invitation for this season of waiting is to look for those times and places when our voices are needed, when a joyful proclamation of the peace and love for which we desperately hope will interrupt the death-dealing ways of sin and empire that Christ came to challenge. To everything there is a season, and a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be silent and a time to speak. Advent is the time of waiting, of preparing, of remembering what was and envisioning what one day shall be. It is a time of silence, of stillness, of contemplation, and it is a time of speaking, of proclaiming, of crying out in the wilderness. May your Advent be blessed with peaceful silence and hopeful speaking. Amen. And now, I invite you into a time of stillness to reflect on these words, the words of your own heart, and that which cannot be expressed in words.